She swipes her thumb across the screen, and it takes a moment for me to realize what I'm seeing. I snatch the phone from her hands before she can stop me. An iPhone? You're shitting me! I stare down at the new phone in my hands. This is yours?
Yeah?
Her cheeks flush, and she reaches for the phone, but I stretch my arms above my head, out of her reach.
Oh, so now you get an iPhone, but when I wanted you to, you absolutely refused,
I tease. Her eyes are wide, and she takes a nervous breath.
Why the change of heart?
I smile at her, easing her discomfort.
I don't know. It was time, I guess.
She shrugs her shoulders, still nervous. I don't like how she looks unsettled, but I'm hoping that a little playfulness is all that's needed.
What's the passcode?
I ask, while hitting the numbers that I'm guessing she'll have used.
Ha!
Got it on the first try, and I'm welcomed in by her home screen.
Harden!
She squeals, attempting to grab the phone from me.
You can't just go through my phone!
She leans across and grabs my bare arm with one hand and reaches for the phone with the other.
Yes, I can!
I laugh. The simplest touch from her has me buzzing. Every cell beneath my skin is alive from her skin on mine. She smiles and holds out a demanding little hand to match that sweet little grin that I've missed so much.
All right, give me yours then.
Nope, sorry.
I continue to tease her while obsessively scrolling through her text messages.
Give me the phone!
She whines and moves closer to me, but then her smile disappears.
There are probably a lot of things on your phone that I don't want to see.
And like that, I can feel her guard sliding back into place.
No, there isn't. There are over 1,000 pictures of you and an entire album of your bullshit music.
And if you really want to see how pathetic I am, you could check the call logs and see how many times I've called your old number just to hear that robotic bitch voice tell me that your number is no longer in service. She glares at me, obviously not believing me. Not that I blame her. Her eyes soften, but only momentarily, before she says,
None of Janine?
Her voice is so low that I barely catch the accusation.
What? No! Go on, look at it. It's on the dresser.
I'd rather not.
I lean up onto my knees and press my shoulder into hers.
Tessa, she's nothing to me. Never will be.
Tessa's trying hard not to care. She's fighting within herself to show me that she has moved on from me. But I know her better than that. I know that she's stewing over the idea of me with another woman.
I need to go.
She stands to leave, and I reach for her. My fingers gently grab her arm, softly asking for her to come back to me. She hesitates at first, and I don't force her. I wait for her, my fingers rubbing small circles into the soft skin above her wrist.
I know what you think happened, but you're wrong.
I try to convince her.
No, I know what I saw. I saw her in your shirt,
she snaps. She pulls her hand away from me, but stands closer.
I was out of my mind, Tessa, but I didn't fuck her.
I wouldn't have. Having her touch me was bad enough. For a moment, I wonder if I should tell Tessa the way I couldn't stand Janine's cigarette-flavored lips on mine, but that seems like it would only set her off.
Sure.
She rolls her eyes defiantly.
I miss you and your attitude.
I try to lighten the mood, but she only rolls her eyes again.
I love you.
That gains her attention, and she pushes at my chest to put some space between our bodies.
Stop doing that! You can't just decide you want me now and expect me to come running back to you.
I want to tell her that she's going to come back to me because she belongs with me, that I will never stop trying to convince her of this. But instead, I smile at her and shake my head. Let's change the subject. I just wanted you to know that I miss you, okay?
Okay.
She sighs. She brings her fingers to her lips and pinches them, making me forget what I was going to change the subject to. An iPhone. I turn her phone in my hand again.
I can't believe you got an iPhone and weren't going to tell me.
I glance over and watch as her frown turns into a half smile.
It's not a big deal. It helps a lot with my schedule, and Landon is going to show me how to download music and movies.
Landon's offer as we were leaving the cell phone store seems so long ago. So much has happened in such a short time.
I can help you. It's okay, really,
she says, trying to dismiss me.
I will help you. I can show you now.
I pull up the iTunes store. We spend an hour this way, me going through the catalogue, choosing all of her favourite music, and showing her how to download those cheesy Tom Hanks romantic comedies that she seems to love. Tessa is nearly silent the entire time. Only a few thank yous and no, not that songs are given, and I try not to push her for conversation. I did this to her. I turned her into the quiet, unsure woman before me, and it's my fault that she doesn't know how to act right now. It's my fault that every time I lean into her, she pulls away, taking a piece of me with her each time. It seems impossible that I would have anything left to give her, that she doesn't already consume and own every single part of me. But somehow, when she smiles at me, my body comes up with a little more of myself to let her steal away. It's all for her, and it will always be that way.
Do you need me to show you how to download the best porn, too?
I joke, and I'm awarded another flush of her cheeks.
Oh, I'm sure you know all about that,
she teases back. I love this. I love being able to tease her the way I used to, and I fucking love that she's letting me. Not really, actually. I have plenty of images up here. I tap at my forehead with my cast, and she grimaces. Only of you. Her frown doesn't waver, but I refuse to allow her to think this way. It's insane thinking that I would be interested in anyone but her. I'm starting to think she's as crazy as I am. Maybe that would explain why she stayed with me as long as she did. I mean it. I only think of you. It's always you. My tone is serious now. Too fucking serious. But I don't care enough to change it. I've tried the joking, friendly shit, and I hurt her feelings. She surprises me by asking,
What types of things do you think about me?
I bring my bottom lip between my teeth as images of her flash through my mind. You don't want me to answer that. Tessa spread out on the bed, her thighs pushed apart and her fingers clawing at the sheets as she comes against my tongue. Tessa's hips moving in slow, torturing circles, as she rides my cock, her moans filling the room. Tessa kneeling in front of me, her full lips parting as she takes me into her warm mouth. Tessa leaning forward, her naked skin glowing in the soft light of the room. She's in front of me, facing away from me as she lowers her body onto me. I feel her as she gasps my name.
You're probably right,
she laughs, then sighs.
We always do this. We always slip right back into this.
She waves her hand back and forth between us. I know exactly what she means. I'm in the middle of the worst week of my life, and she has me laughing and smiling over a damn iPhone.
This is us, baby. This is how we are. We can't help it. We can help it. We have to. I have to.
Her words may sound convincing in her mind, but she's not fooling me.
Stop overthinking everything. You know this is how it should be. Us teasing one another over porn, me thinking about all the dirty things I have done, and there's still more I want to do to you. This is literally insane. We can't do this.
She leans in closer to me.
Do what? Everything isn't about sex.
Her eyes focus on my crotch, and I can tell she's trying to look away from the bulge there. I never said it was, but you can do us both a favor and stop acting like you aren't thinking the same things that I am.
We can't.
But then I notice our breathing has synchronized, and ever so subtly her tongue peeks out and caresses her bottom lip. I didn't offer, I remind her. I didn't offer, but I sure as hell wouldn't refuse. I'm not that lucky, though. There is no way she will let me touch her. Not any time soon. Right?
You were suggesting.
She smiles. When aren't I?
True.
She fights a giggle.
This is so confusing. We shouldn't be doing this. I don't trust myself around you.
Fuck. I'm glad she doesn't. I don't trust me half the time. But I say, what could be the worst to happen? I move a hand to her shoulder. She flinches at the touch, but it's not the same repellent flinch that I've been dealing with for the last week.
I could continue to be an idiot,
she whispers, and I move my hand slowly up and down the length of her arm.
Stop thinking. Just shut your mind off and let your body control this.
Your body wants me, Tessa. It needs me. She shakes her head, denying the simple truth.
Yes, yes, it does.
I continue touching her, closer to her chest now, waiting for her to stop me. If she does, I will cease all contact. I would never push this on her. I've done a lot of fucked up shit, but that's never an option.
See, the thing is
that I know every single place to touch you. I look into her eyes for approval, and they're flashing like a neon sign. She's not going to stop me. Her body still craves me as it always has.
I know how to make you come so hard that you'll forget everything else.
Maybe if I can please her body, her mind will follow suit. Then, once I can break through to both mind and body, her heart will follow their lead. I've never been shy when it comes to her body and pleasing her. Why start now? I take her silence and the way she can't seem to take her eyes off mine for a yes, and reach for the hem of her sweatshirt. Damn this thing. It's heavier than it should be, and the damn string is tangled into Tessa's hair. She swats at my bad hand and removes the sweatshirt and detaches her hair from the thing. I'm not forcing you into anything here, am I? I have to ask.
No,
she breathes.
I know it's a terrible idea, but I don't want to stop.
I nod.
I need an escape from everything. Please distract me.
Shut your mind off. Stop thinking about all the other shit and focus on this. I run my fingers along her neckline, and she shivers under my touch. She catches me off guard and presses her lips to mine. Within seconds, the slow, unsure kiss vanishes and is replaced by us. The timid gestures evaporate, and suddenly we are in our own place. All the other bullshit's gone, and it's only me and Tessa, and her lips crushing against mine, her tongue making hurried swipes across my own, her hands in my hair, tugging at the roots and driving me fucking wild. I wrap my arms around her and press my hips into hers until her back reaches the mattress. Her knee is bent, lifted, level with my crotch, and I shamelessly rub myself against her. She gasps at my desperation and removes a hand from my hair to bring down to her own chest. I could burst at the feeling of having her under me again. It's too fucking much, yet it's not enough, and I can't form a thought aside from her. She touches herself, gripping one of her large breasts, and I look down like I've forgotten how to do anything else except stare at her perfect body and the way she's finally letting loose with me. She needs this even more than I do. She needs the distraction from the real world, and I will gladly serve in that role. Our moves aren't calculated. Pure passion is fueling us. I'm the fire, and she's the damn gasoline, and there's no sign of stopping or slowing until something is sure to explode. I'll be waiting then, ready to fight the flames for her, keeping her safe so she doesn't get burned by me again. Her hand travels down her body, and she grips me, rubbing her hand over me, and I have to concentrate not to come from her hand alone. I shift my hips, resting them between her parted legs as she tugs at the waistband of my shorts. I tug at hers with one hand until both of us are naked from the waist down. The groan that escapes her lips matches my own when I rub against her, skin to skin. I shift slightly, entering her partially, and she groans again. This time she presses her mouth to my bare shoulder. She's licking and sucking at my skin as I push farther inside her. My vision blurs as I try to savor every second of this, every moment that she's willing to be with me in this way. I love you, I promise her. Her mouth stops moving, and her grip on my arms loosens.
Harden, marry me, Tessa. Please.
I push my cock inside her, filling her, hoping to catch her in an unfair moment of weakness.
If you're going to say things like that, then we can't do this,
she says softly. I can see the hurt in her eyes, the lack of self-control she has when it comes to me, and I instantly feel guilty for bringing up fucking marriage while fucking her. Great fucking timing, you selfish asshole. I'm sorry, I'll stop. I assure her with a kiss. I will give her this time to think, and I will lay off the heavy shit while I'm thrusting in and out of her hot, wet.
Oh, God,
she moans. Instead of confessing my undying love for her, I'll only say the things she wants to hear.
You feel so fucking tight around me. It's been so long,
I say against her neck, and one of her hands presses against the bottom of my back, pressing me deeper into her. Her eyes pinch shut, and her legs begin to tighten. I know she's already close, and even though she hates me right now, she loves my filthy mouth. I'm not going to last long, but neither is she. I've missed this. Not only the pure fucking perfection that it is to be inside her, but being close to her in this way is something I need, something she needs.
Come on, baby. Come around me. Let me feel you,
I say through gritted teeth. She obeys, clenching one of my arms and whimpering my name as she pushes her head back into the mattress. She comes apart, stitch by beautifully constructed stitch, and I watch her. I watch her beautiful mouth fall open as she whimpers my name. I watch the way her eyes find mine just before they close in pleasure. It's too much, the beauty of her coming for me, allowing me to have her. I push myself into her once more, grabbing onto her hip as I spill into her.
Fuck!
I drop to my elbows next to her, careful not to crush her with the weight of my body. Her eyes are closed, her lids heavy as she struggles to open them. She agrees. I prop myself up onto my elbow and stare at her while she's not looking. I'm afraid of what will happen when she comes to, when she begins to regret this and her anger toward me grows. You okay? I can't help but trace the curve of her bare hip with my finger.
Yeah.
Her voice is thick and sated. I'm so fucking glad she came to my door. I don't know how much longer I could have gone without seeing her or hearing her voice.
You're sure?
I push. I need to know what this meant to her.
Yes.
She opens one eye, and I can't fight the stupid smile on my face.
Okay.
I nod. As I look at her, relaxing in her afterglow, it feels so nice to have her back, even if only for a few moments. She closes her eyes again, And right then I remember something. So, what did you come here for in the first place? Immediately, the sated, sleepy look disappears from her beautiful face, and for a moment she opens both eyes wide before regaining her composure. What is it? I ask, Zed's face surfacing in my demented thoughts. Tell me, please.
It's Karen.
She rolls onto her side, and I force my eyes away from her perfect tits on display. Why the hell are we discussing Karen while naked?
Okay, what about her?
She's... well...
Tessa stops for a moment, and my chest fills with an unexpected panic for the woman. For Ken, too.
She's what?
She's pregnant.
What? The fuck? By who? This obliviousness amuses Tessa, and she laughs.
Your father,
she says, but quickly corrects herself.
By Ken. Who else?
I don't know what I was expecting to hear, but Karen's being pregnant was sure as hell not it.
What?
I know it's a little surprising, but they're very happy about it.
A little surprising? This is more than a little fucking surprising. Ken and Karen are having a baby. I speak the ridiculous words.
Yes.
Tessa eyes me carefully.
How do you feel about it?
How do I feel about it? I don't fucking know. I barely know the man. We're just starting to build something here, and now he's having a baby. Another kid he'll actually be sticking around to help raise. I guess it doesn't matter how I feel, does it? I say in a vain attempt to shut both of us up. I lie on my back and close my eyes.
Yes, it does. It matters to them. They want you to know that the baby won't change anything, Harden. They want you to be part of the family. You'll be a big brother again.
A big brother? Smith and his weird adult-like personality come to mind, and I feel nauseated. This is too much for anyone to handle, and it's sure as hell too much for someone as fucked up as me.
Harden, I know it's hard to wrap your head around, but I think...
I'm fine. I need a shower. I climb out of the bed and grab the shorts from the floor. Tessa sits up, confused and hurt, as I pull the shorts up my legs.
I'm here if you want to talk about it. I wanted to be the one to tell you about all of this.
It's too much. She doesn't even want me. She refuses to marry me. Why can't she see what we are? What we are together? We cannot be apart. Ours is a love of the novels, better than any Austen or Bronte she has memorized. My heart is pounding out of my chest. I can barely breathe. She feels as if she isn't living. I can't understand that. I just can't. I only live when it comes to her. She's the only breath of life inside of me, and without it, I will be nothing. I will neither survive nor live. I wouldn't want to, even if I could. Fuck. The dark thoughts are fighting their way back into my head, and I'm overwhelmed by the struggle to hold on to the little bit of light Tessa has given back to me. When will this end? When will shit not keep popping up each and every fucking time I finally feel like I have a grasp on my own mind?
Chapter 45. Tessa. Here I am, here we are, in this endless loop of happiness, lust, passion, overwhelming love, and pain. The pain seems to win. It always wins. And I'm tired of fighting. I watch, forcing myself not to care as he crosses the room. The moment the door closes, I smack my hands to my forehead and rub at my temples. What is wrong with me that I can't seem to see anything but him? Why did I wake up this morning ready to face life without him, only to find myself in his bed hours later? I hate that he has this power over me, but for the life of me, I can't stop it. I can't blame him for my weakness, but if I was going to, I would have to argue that he makes it difficult to see the clear lines of right and wrong. When he smiles at me, those lines blur and mix, and it's literally impossible to fight the sensation that pulls at my whole body. He makes me laugh just as often as he makes me cry, and he makes me feel again when I was convinced that my fate was the nothingness inside me. I fully believed that I would never feel anything again, but Hardin pulled me out of that. He grabbed my hand when no one else seemed to care enough to do so, and he pulled me up onto the surface. Not that any of this changes that we just can't be together. We simply don't work, and I can't allow myself to get my hopes up again, only to be crushed when he pulls back again, when he takes back everything he has confessed, and I refuse to be ripped apart again and again by the only hand that helps me. Here I am, face in hands, obsessively overthinking the mistakes made. My mistakes, his mistakes, our parents' mistakes, and how mine seemed to be eating away at me, refusing to allow me any peace. I got a hint of it, a hint of serenity and calm when his hands were on me, his mouth hot on mine, his fingers digging into the sensitive skin covering my hips. But minutes later, the fire's extinguished and I'm alone. I'm alone and hurt and embarrassed, and it's the same story, only with an even more pathetic ending than the last installment. I get to my feet, refasten my bra, and tug Landon's sweatshirt over my head. I can't be here when Hardin returns. I can't spend the next 10 minutes preparing myself for whichever Hardin decides to make an appearance. I've done this too many times, and I finally got myself to a place where my need for him wasn't so overpowering, where he wasn't consuming my every thought, he wasn't responsible for my every breath, and I was finally able to see a life after him. This was a relapse. That's all it was. This was a terrible lapse in judgment, and I'm harshly reminded of that by the silence of the room. I'm dressed and in my room by the time I hear him opening the bathroom door. His footsteps grow louder as he passes by, and it only takes him a few seconds to realize that I'm no longer in his room. He doesn't knock, I knew he wouldn't, before he enters my room. I'm sitting on the bed, legs crossed and held in front of me, protecting myself. I must look pathetic to him. My eyes are burning with regretful tears and my skin smelling of him.
Why did you leave?
His hair is wet, dripping water down his forehead, and his hands are resting on his bare hips, his shorts hanging too low. I didn't. You did, I stubbornly point out. He blankly stares at me as a few seconds pass.
I guess you're right. Come back?
He forms the demand like a question, and I fight myself not to get up from the bed. I don't think that's a good idea. I look away from his gaze, and he treads across the room to sit across from me on the bed.
Why is that? I'm sorry I freaked out. I just didn't know what to think. And if I'm being totally fucking honest, I didn't trust myself not to say the wrong thing to you, so I figured I would leave the room and clear my head.
Why couldn't he have behaved this way before? Why couldn't he be honest and level-headed when I needed him to be? Why did it take me finally pulling away for him to want to change? I wish you would have at least indicated that instead of just leaving me alone in there. I nod, gathering the tiny scrap of strength inside me. I don't think we should be alone together. His eyes go wild.
What are you talking about?
He growls. So much for level-headed. I keep my arms crossed. I want to be here for you, and I will be. If you need to talk about anything or vent, or if you just want someone to be there. But I really think we should stay in common areas, like the living room or the kitchen.
You're not serious.
He scoffs. I am.
Common areas? Like with Landon serving as our Eleanor Tilney? This is ridiculous, Tess. We can be in the same room without a damn chaperone.
I didn't say anything about chaperones. I just think with how everything is now, I sigh. I think I'm going back to Seattle for a few days. I hadn't fully decided that until now, but now that I've spoken the words, they make sense. I have to get my things ready to move to New York, and I miss Kimberly. I have a doctor's appointment that I've been trying not to think about, and I don't see any good coming from playing house at the Scott residence, yet again.
I'll come with you.
He offers plainly, like it's the simplest solution. Hardin, Without asking, he takes a seat on the bed, bare-chested and all.
I was going to wait to bring this up, but I'm moving out of that apartment, and I'm moving to Seattle too. That's what you wanted all along, and I'm ready to do it. I don't know what took me so long.
He swipes his hand across his hair, pushing the drying strands so they stand up in a messy wave. I shake my head at him. What are you talking about? Now he wants to move to Seattle?
I'll get us a nice place. It won't be a mansion like you're used to at Vance's, but it will be nicer than anywhere you can afford on your own.
Though I know his words weren't meant as an insult, that's how they feel, and instantly I'm on edge. You don't get it, I accuse, flinging my arms up. You're missing the entire point of everything.
What point? Why does there have to be a point to any of this?
He scoots a little closer.
Why can't we just be, and why can't you just let me show you who I can be for you? It doesn't have to be about points and keeping score and making yourself miserable because you love me and won't allow yourself to be with me.
He covers my hand with his own. I pull mine away. I want to agree with you, and I would love to buy into this fantasy world where we could work, but I've done that for too long, and I can't do it anymore. You tried to warn me before, and you gave me chance after chance to see the inevitable, but I was in denial. I can see it now, though. I see that we have been doomed from the start. How many times will we have this conversation? He looks at me with those penetrating green eyes.
As many times as it takes to change your mind.
I could never change yours. What makes you think you could change mine?
What just happened between us didn't make it obvious to you?
I want you to be a part of my life, just not in that way. Not as my boyfriend.
Husband?
His eyes are full of humor and... hope? I stare at him, amazed that he would dare. We aren't together, Harden, and you can't throw marriage in my face because you think it will change my mind. I wanted you to want to marry me, not offer it as a last resort. His breathing accelerates, but his voice comes out smooth.
It's not a last resort. I'm not playing games with you. I've learned my lesson there. I want to marry you because I can't imagine living my life any other way, and you can go ahead and tell me I'm wrong, but you know we may as well get married now. We won't be apart, and you know it.
He sounds so sure of himself, and sure of our relationship, and again I'm confused, and can't decide if I should be angry, or if I should be happy about his words. Marriage doesn't hold the same value as it did only months ago. My parents were never married. I could barely believe it when I found out that they pretended to be to appease my mother and my grandparents. Trish and Ken were married, and that legal binding couldn't save their sinking ship. What's the point of being married, really? It almost never works anyway, and I'm beginning to see that it's a ridiculous concept. It's messed up, the way the idea is drilled into our heads that we should promise ourselves to another and depend on that person as our source of happiness. Luckily for me, I've finally learned that I can't depend on anyone else for my happiness. I don't think I even want to be married. Ever. Harden sucks in a harsh breath, and his hand moves to my chin.
What? You don't mean that.
His eyes search mine. Yes, I do mean that. What's the point? It never works, and divorce isn't cheap. I shrug my shoulders and ignore the horrified expression covering Harden's face.
What the hell are you saying? Since when are you so cynical?
Cynical? I don't believe that I'm cynical. I just need to be realistic and not keep holding out for a storybook ending that I will obviously never have. But it's also not like I'm going to put up with his back and forth all the time. I don't know, since I realized how hopelessly stupid I was. I don't blame you for ending things with me. I was obsessed with having a life I could never have, and it had to drive you insane. Harden tugs at his hair in that frustrated way he does.
Tessa, you're talking crazy shit. You weren't obsessed with anything. I was just an asshole.
He groans in frustration and kneels in front of me.
Fuck. Now look what I've got you thinking. This is all backwards.
I stand up, hating feeling guilty for saying the truth about how I feel. I'm so internally conflicted, and being in this small room with Harden isn't helping. Near him, I can't focus, and I can't stick to my defenses when he's looking at me like each of my words is a weapon against him, No matter how true that is, it still makes me feel sympathy for him when I don't think I should. I was always so quick to judge women who felt this way. While watching an overly dramatic relationship on screen, I was quick to label the woman as weak, but it's not that simple or that cut and dried. There are so many things to take into consideration when labeling someone, and I'll admit, before I met Harden, I did this far too often. Who am I to judge people based on their feelings? I never knew how strong those foolish emotions could be. I couldn't comprehend the magnetic pull that could be felt. I never understood the way love overpowers common sense and passion overtakes logic, or how unnerving it is that no one else really knows how you feel. No one can judge me for being weak or stupid. No one can put me down for the way I feel. I will never claim to be perfect, and I am struggling every second to keep myself above water, but it's not as easy as people assume. It's not so easy to walk away from someone when he has made his way into every cell, when he has taken over every thought, and he has been responsible for the best and worst feelings I've ever had. No one, not even the doubting part of me, can make me feel bad for loving passionately and hoping desperately that I could have that great love that I've read about in novels. By the time I finish justifying my actions to myself, my subconscious has taken her hair down and closed her eyes, relieved that I've finally stopped beating myself up for the way that my emotions have been playing me.
Tessa, I'm coming to Seattle. I won't try and force you to live with me, but I want to be where you are. I'll keep my distance until you're ready for more, and I'll play nice with everyone, even Vance.
That's not the issue, I sigh. His determination is admirable, but it's never been consistent. He will get bored eventually and move on with his life. We are too far gone this time.
Like I said before, I will try to keep my distance, but I'm coming to Seattle. If you won't help me decide on an apartment, I'll have to choose it myself, but I'll make sure you like it too.
He doesn't need to know my plans. I use my thoughts to drown out his words. If I hear them, if I really listen to them, they will break down the barrier I've built. The surface split open only an hour ago, and I let my emotions control my body. But I can't let that happen again. Harden leaves the room after another 10 minutes of me trying to ignore his promises, and I start packing my bag for Seattle. I've been going back and forth, traveling too much lately, and I look forward to the day when I finally have a place to call home. I need the security. I need the stability. How is it that I spent my entire life planning for stability, only to be out in the world swaying along with no base to call my own, no safety net, nothing at all? When I reach the bottom of the stairs, Landon is leaning against the wall and he stops me with a gentle hand on my arm.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you before you leave.
I stand in front of him and wait for him to speak. I hope he's not changing his mind on letting me tag along to New York.
I just wanted to check with you and see if you've changed your mind about coming with me to NYU. If you did, that's okay. I just need to know so I can tell Ken about the flight arrangements.
No, I'm still coming. I just need to go to Seattle and say goodbye to Kim and... I want to tell him about my appointment, but I don't think I'm ready to face that just yet. Nothing is certain, but I'd rather not think about it just yet.
Are you sure? I don't want you to feel like you have to go. I'll understand if you want to stay here... with him.
Landon's voice is so kind, so understanding, that I can't help but throw my arms around his shoulders. You are amazing. You know that, right? I smile up at him. I haven't changed my mind. I want to do this. I have to do this for myself.
When are you going to tell him? What do you think he will do?
I haven't put much thought into what Harden will do when I tell him my plans to move across the country. I don't have time to let Harden's opinion shape my plans. Not anymore. I honestly don't know how he will react. Up until my father's funeral, I don't think he would have cared one bit. Landon nods noncommittally. Then noises from the kitchen break our silence, and I'm reminded that I haven't congratulated him on the news. I can't believe you didn't tell me that your mother is pregnant, I exclaim, thankful for the easy subject change.
I know, I'm sorry. She just told me, and you've been keeping yourself locked in that room.
He smiles, gently teasing me. Are you sad that you're leaving now with a baby sibling on the way? I briefly wonder if Landon likes being an only child, We've only discussed it a few times, but he always avoids talking about his father, so the attention was quickly directed back to me each time.
A little. I'm just worried how my mom will handle the pregnancy alone. And I'll miss her and Ken, but I'm ready for this.
He smiles at me.
I think I am, at least.
I nod with assurance. We will be fine. Especially you. You've already been accepted. I'm moving there without knowing if I will even get in. I'll just be floating around New York without being enrolled, and I'll have no job and... Landon's hand covers my mouth and he laughs.
I feel that same panic when I think about the change, but I force myself to focus on the positives.
Which are? I mumble against his hand.
Well, it's New York. That's all I've gotten so far.
He admits with a deep laugh, and I find myself smiling from ear to ear as Karen joins us in the hallway.
I'll miss that sound when you two leave, she says, her eyes shining under the lights.
Ken walks up behind her and places a kiss on the back of her head.
We all will.
Chapter 46. Harden. When I answer the knock at my door, I don't bother trying to hide my disappointment when I'm greeted with Ken's awkward smile instead of the girl I want. He stands there, clearly waiting for permission to enter.
I wanted to talk to you about the baby, he says tentatively.
I knew this was coming. Much to my disappointment, there is no way to avoid this shit.
Come in, then. I move out of his way, sitting down in the chair next to the desk.
I have no fucking clue what he's going to say, or what I'm going to say, or how this will end up, but I can't see it going well.
Ken doesn't sit down. He just stands by the dresser with his hands shoved into the pockets of his grey dress slacks. The fact that the grey matches the stripes on his tie, and he's wearing a black sweater vest, just screams, I'm the Chancellor at an accredited university!
But looking past that, I see the worry in his brown eyes, and how his brows are knitted together. He's fumbling with his hands in such a pathetic way that I just want to put him out of his misery.
I'm fine. I know you probably assumed I'd be breaking shit and throwing a tantrum, but honestly, I don't care if you're having a baby, I finally say.
He sighs, not looking relieved as I had sort of hoped he would.
It's okay if you're a little upset about it. I know it's unexpected, and I know how you feel about me. I just hope this doesn't make your ill feelings toward me grow.
He looks down at the floor, and I find myself wishing Tessa were here next to me, instead of wherever with Karen. I need to see her before she leaves. I promised to give her space, but I didn't expect this father-son moment to be thrown at me.
You know nothing of how I feel about you.
Hell, I don't think I even know how I feel about him. His patience with me is never ending as he says,
I hope this doesn't change or take away from any of the progress we've made. I know I have a lot to make up for, but I really hope you'll allow me to keep trying.
When I hear that, I feel a kinship between us that I hadn't before. We are both fuck-ups. Both of us have been led by stupid decisions and addictions, and I'm pissed that I got this trait from being raised by him. If Vance had raised me, I wouldn't be this way. I wouldn't be so fucked up inside. I wouldn't have been afraid of my dad's coming home drunk, and I wouldn't have sat on the floor with my mum for hours while she wept and bled and struggled to stay conscious after the beating she endured because of his mistakes. Anger simmers inside me, humming in my veins, and I'm two breaths away from calling for Tessa. I need her at times like this. Well, I need her always, but especially now. I need her soft voice to speak encouraging words. I need her light to push against the shadows inside my mind.
I want you to be a part of the baby's life, Harden. I think this could be a really good thing for all of us.
Us? I scoff.
Yes, all of us. You're a part of this family. When I married Karen and took on the role of Landon's father, I know you felt like I was forgetting about you,
and I don't want you to feel this way because of the baby. Forgetting me? You forgot about me long before you married Karen. But I don't get the same thrill out of throwing shit into his face, now that I know the truth about his past with my mum and Christian. I feel for him, and the shit those two pulled. But at the same time, I'm fucking pissed at him for being such a shitty father up until this last year. Even if he wasn't my biological dad, he was in charge of taking care of us. He accepted that role and then just gave it up to drink. So I can't help myself. I should, but the anger is buzzing in me, and I need to know. I have to know why he would attempt to make amends with me if he isn't completely positive that he's my father. When did you know that my mum was fucking Vance behind your back? I ask, releasing the words like a grenade. All the air leaves the room, and Ken looks as if he will pass out any second. Ow! He stops and rubs a hand across the stubble on his chin. Who told you that? Cut the shit. I know all about them. That's what happened in London. I caught them together. He had her on the kitchen counter. Oh, God, he says, his voice strangled and his chest heaving. Before or after the wedding? Before, but she still got married anyway. Why did you stay with her if you knew she wanted him? He takes a few breaths and looks around the room. Then he shrugs. I loved her. He looks me in the eyes, naked honesty seeming to remove any distance between us. I don't have a reason aside from that. I loved her, and I loved you, and I kept hoping that one day she would stop loving him. That day never came, and it was eating me alive. I knew what she was doing and what he, my best friend, was doing. But I had so much hope for us, and I thought she would eventually choose me. She didn't, I note. She may have chosen to marry him and spend her life with him, but she didn't choose him in any way that mattered. Clearly. And I should have given up long before I turned to alcohol. The shame in his eyes is humbling. Yeah, you should have. Everything would be so different if he had. I know you don't understand it, and I know that my poor choices and false hopes ruined your childhood for you. So I don't expect your forgiveness or understanding. He puts his hands together as if he were praying and covers his mouth with them. I stay silent because I can't think of anything to say. My mind is reeling with horrid memories and the reality of how fucked all three of my parent-like figures are. I don't even know what to call them. I suppose I felt like she would see that he couldn't offer her the stability that I could. I had a good job, and I wasn't as much of a flight risk as Christian was. He pauses, and with his deep breath, his vest tightens on his chest, and he looks at me. I reckon if Tessa marries another man, this is how he will feel. He will always be competing with you, and even when you leave her for the 100th time, he will be competing with the memory of you. He's confident in what he's saying. I can tell by his tone and by the way he's looking me square in the eyes. I'm not leaving her again, I say through gritted teeth. My fingers are clenching the edge of the desk. He said that too. He sighs and leans back against the dresser. I'm not him. I know you aren't. I'm in no way saying that you are Christian or that Tessa is like your mum. Lucky for you, it's only you that Tessa sees. If your mum wouldn't have fought her feelings for him, they could have been happy together. Instead, they allowed their toxic relationship to ruin the lives of everyone around them. Ken brushes his hand over his facial hair again, an annoying habit. Catherine and Heathcliff come to mind, and I want to vomit at the easy comparison. Tessa and I may be a huge fucking disaster like the two characters, but I won't allow us to suffer the same fate. but none of what Ken is saying makes sense to me. Why would he put up with so much shit from me if he had the slightest inkling that I wasn't his problem to begin with?
So it's true, then. He's your father, isn't he?
He asks as if losing some vital force that had been animating him. The strong, scary man from my childhood has disappeared and been replaced by a heartbroken man on the verge of tears. I want to tell him that he's a damn idiot for putting up with this shit from me, that my mum and I can't forget the hell he made my life as a child. It's his fault that I side with the demons and fight against the angels. It's his fault that I have a special place in hell and am not welcomed in heaven. It's his fault that Tessa won't be with me. It's his fault that I hurt her too many times to count, and it's his fault that I'm just now trying to fix 21 years of mistakes. When instead of all that, I don't say anything, Ken lets out a breath.
I knew from the first time I saw you that you were his.
His words nearly knock the wind from my chest, along with the angry thoughts in my mind.
I knew it.
He's trying not to cry, but failing. I cringe and look away from the tears on his cheeks.
I knew. How could I not have? You looked just like him, and as each year passed, your mum would cry a little harder. She would sneak off with him a little more. I knew. I didn't want to admit it because you were all that I had. I didn't have your mum. I never really did. Since I met her, she was his. You were all I had. And as I allowed my anger to take over, I ruined that too.
He stops to catch his breath, and I sit in confused silence.
You would have been better off with him. I know you would have been. But I loved you. I still love you as if you are my own flesh. And I can only hope that you will let me stay in your life.
He's still crying. Too many tears roll down his face, and I find myself feeling for him. Some of the weight on my chest has lifted, and I can feel years of anger dissolving inside me. I don't know what this feeling is. It's strong and it's freeing. By the time he looks up at me, I don't even feel like myself. I'm not myself. That's the only explanation for why my arms are touching his shoulders and wrapping around his back to comfort him. As I do so, I feel him shake. And then he really begins sobbing with his whole body.
Chapter 47. Tessa. The drive was just about as terrible as I had anticipated. The road never seemed to want to end. Each yellow line was one of his smiles, one of his scowls. Every endless line of traffic seemed to be mocking every mistake I've ever made, and each car on the road was yet another stranger, another person with his or her own problems. I felt alone, too alone, in my small car as I drove farther and farther from where I wanted to be. Am I foolish to even fight this? Could I possibly be strong enough to fight the current this time? Do I even want to? What are the chances that this one time, out of what feels like hundreds of times, will be so different? Is he just using the words I've always wanted to hear out of desperation because he knows how detached I've become? My head feels like a 2,000-page novel full of deep thoughts, mindless chatter, and a bunch of crap questions that I don't know the answers to. When I'd pulled up in front of Kimberly and Christian's house only minutes ago, the tension in my shoulders was nearly unbearable. I could literally feel the muscles underneath my skin tightening to the point of snapping, and as I stand in the living room now, waiting for Kimberly to come down, that tension only continues to grow. Smith descends the stairs and crinkles his nose in disgust. She said she will be down when she's done rubbing my dad's leg. I can't help but laugh at the dimpled little boy. Okay, thank you. He didn't say a word when he opened the door for me minutes ago. He just looked me up and down and waved me inside with a small smile. I was impressed by the smile, small or not. He sits down on the edge of the couch without a word. He focuses on a gadget in his hand while I focus on him. Hardin's little brother. It's such a weird idea that this adorable little boy, who seems to dislike me for some reason, has been Hardin's biological brother all along. It makes sense in a way. He was always so curious about Hardin and seemed to enjoy his company when most people don't. He turns, catching me staring at him. "Where's your Hardin?" "Your Hardin." It feels like every single time he asks that question, my Hardin is far away. Farther than ever this time. He's... Then Kimberly enters the room, barreling toward me with outstretched arms. Of course she would be wearing heels and makeup. I suppose the outside world is still revolving, even though mine has stopped. "Tessa!" she screeches, wrapping her arms around my shoulders and squeezing so tight that I let out a cough. "Gah! It's been too long!" She squeezes one more time before pulling back and dragging me by the arm into the kitchen. "How is everything?" I ask, and climb up on the same stool I always seem to find myself on. She stands in front of the breakfast bar and runs her hands through her shoulder-length blonde hair, pulling it back and tying it into a messy bun on top of her head. "Well, we all survived that damn trip to London." She grimaces, and I do the same. "Barely, but we did." "How is Mr. Vance's leg?" "Mr. Vance?" She laughs. "No, you're not reverting to that because of all that weirdness. I'd say you can go ahead and say Christian or Vance. His leg is healing. Luckily, the fire mostly caught his clothes, not skin." A frown takes over her face, and a shiver rakes her shoulders. "Is he in trouble? Legal trouble?" I ask, trying not to be pushy. "Not really. He fabricated a story about a group of punks who broke in there and vandalized the house before burning it. It's now an arson case with no leads." She shakes her head and rolls her eyes. She brushes her hands on her dress and looks back to me. "How are you, though, Tessa? I'm really sorry to hear about your dad. I should have called you more. I've just been busy and trying to figure all this out." Kimberly reaches across the granite and places her hand over mine, though that's not really a good excuse. "No, no, don't apologize. You've had so much going on, and I haven't been the best company anyway. If you had called, I might not have even been able to answer it. I've been going out of my mind. Literally." I try to laugh, but even I catch how false and dry the awkward noise comes out. "I can tell." She eyes me skeptically. "What's with this?" Her hands wave in front of me, and I look down at my sloppy sweatshirt and dirty jeans. "I don't know. It's been a long 2 weeks." I shrug and tuck my unbrushed hair behind my ears. "You're obviously going through a funk again. Hardin did something new, or is it still from London?" Kimberly raises an arched brow, reminding me of how overgrown mine must be. Plucking and waxing have been the farthest thing from my mind, but Kimberly is one of those women that make you want to be pretty all the time to keep up with her. "Not exactly. Well, he just did what he always does in London, but I finally told him we're done." Seeing the skepticism in her blue eyes, I add, "I mean it. I'm thinking of moving to New York." "New York? What the hell? With Hardin?" Her mouth falls open. "Oh, never mind. You just told me you broke up." She smacks her hand to her forehead in a dramatic display. "With Landon, actually. He's going to NYU, and he asked me to come along. I'm going to take the summer and hopefully be able to get into NYU in the fall." She laughs. "Wow, I need a minute." "It's a big change, I know. It's just that I need to get away from here, and with Landon already going, it just made sense." It's insane, completely insane, to just move across the country, and Kimberly's reaction proves that. "You don't have to explain to me. I think it's a really good idea. I'm just surprised." Kim doesn't even try to control her smirk. "You moving across the country without a schedule or taking a year to plan things out." "It's stupid, right? Isn't it?" I ask, not sure of what I'm hoping to hear. "No. Since when are you so unsure about yourself? Girl, I know you've been going through a lot of shit, but you need to get it together. You're young, brilliant, and beautiful. Life is not that bad. Hell, try cleaning the burn wounds of your fiancé after he covered for his surprise grown-ass son because he'd just cheated on you with his..." She curls her fingers into air quotes and rolls her eyes. "Long-lost love, and having to nurse him while you really just want to choke him out." I don't know if she meant to be funny, but I have to bite my tongue to stop from laughing at the picture she's created in my head. but when she chuckles a little, I follow suit. Seriously, it's okay to be sad, but if you let sadness control your life, you'll never have one. Her words hit me somewhere between my selfish whining and my nerves over moving to New York without a solid plan. She's right. I've been through a lot in the last year, but what good will it do to be this way? To feel the sadness and sting of loss with every thought. As much as I loved the ease of feeling nothing, I didn't feel like myself. I felt my being slipping with each negative thought, and I was beginning to fear that I would never be myself again. I'm still not now, but maybe one day? I know you're right, Kim. I just don't know how to stop. I'm just so mad all the time. I ball my fists, and she nods. Or sad. There's a lot of sad and pain. I don't know how to separate it, and now it's eating away at me, taking over my mind. Well, it's not as easy as I just tried to make it sound. But first of all, you need to get excited. You're moving to New York, girl. Act like it. If you go around moping up the streets of New York City, you'll never make any friends. She smiles, softening her words. And what if I can't? Like, what if I just always feel this way? Then you'll always feel that way. That's that. But you can't think that way right now. I've learned in my years, she grins, not too many years, mind you, but I've learned that shit happens and you move on. It sucks, and trust me, I know this is about Harden. It's always